This is the Daily Coaching Podcast, bringing you thoughts, discussions, and expert insight into all things football and coaching.
Where I was doing my dissertation, I was also doing my A license, and I was player manager at Rochdale. That was the start of a brilliant summer for the FA.
In today's episode of the A Manager Journey series, I am joined by professional manager and coach, Paul Simpson. Now, Paul is currently the assistant coach at Bristol City, but has previously been in charge at clubs such as Rochdale, Preston, and most notably within the FA with the England under 20 side. We talk on his transition from playing into the world of coaching, the importance of education and learning along the journey, the differences between coaching at club and international level, and how he ended England's 51-year wait for World Cup success with the England under 20 side. This one is an inspirational one, both for coaches and players. So therefore, let's get straight into it.
Off, we've kind of given us a background in terms of how you first of all got into football, so your playing days, and then how it kind of took the route of getting into coaching and management, really.
Yeah, no problem. Well, it's a pleasure to be here talking to you for a start. I mean, I came into football many, many years ago, long time before most of your viewers would have been around. I started at Manchester City full time in 1982. I'm from Carlisle, so I played all of my early days in Carlisle in the local leagues and for the schools and county teams. I suppose a similar route to most footballers in those days. I signed as an apprentice in 82, so I left home, moved into Diggs down in Manchester. And from City, it was a bit of a roller coaster time there. Early on, I got straight into the first team when I was 16. I made my debut on a Tuesday night for the reserves and then made my first team debut on the Saturday. And I don't want anybody to think that that was because I was an absolutely worldy wonder kid. It wasn't that. I just had a stroke of luck that the manager was under a bit of pressure. He decided to throw a young lad in, which normally eases the pressure on a manager a little bit. And I was the fortunate one to get thrown into it. I was involved in three or four games. Then I had a bad time, probably for about 18 months. Couple of reasons, really. One, my game just went to pot. I was all over the place. It's funny because the other day I was talking about this on an interview and I said that I maybe got a bit arrogant. And thinking back to it, I've maybe been a bit harsh on myself because I probably wasn't arrogant. I knew I had to keep working hard. It just didn't happen for me. I had a tough time and then I was injured for about 8 or 9 weeks as well with an ankle injury. So a couple of things that affected me. I then was very close to being released by Manchester City. And again, a little bit of luck, really. I played in a reserve game where there was a manager there to watch me with a view to taking me on a free. The first half, I had an absolute shocker in this reserve game. The manager left at half-time, he'd seen enough. Second half, I played well, and I got into the first team on the Saturday for Man City, and from that point, I never actually came out of the team. We had 9 games to go to the end. I played in all 9, scored 6 goals. We got promoted to what was the first division then, so it would have been the Premier League as such. And from then, my Manchester City career just took off, and I had a good few years there. Then got sold to Oxford, then Derby County. At Derby County, I had a couple of loan spells at Sheffield United and Wolves, and then I eventually signed for Wolves. And at Derby County, that was the time where I seriously started thinking about going into the coaching. I'd done my B licence. I was on my A licence to do that. I was also doing a sports science degree. I decided I needed to know a bit more about the whole physiology and the biomechanical side of it. So I did that. And then from there, then I left Wolves, went to Blackpool as a player, started seriously thinking about the coaching. So I'd been coaching at Derby County in the academy. I then went to Blackburn Rovers while I was still playing, doing coaching there. And then I went from being the under-8s coach at Blackburn Rovers to being the first team player manager at Rochdale, which was a massive change. And then from there, it's just, I suppose it's just all rolled into one, really, as it generally does. I mean, we talked earlier about it being really difficult to get into coaching and management in the game. Mine just happened. And I still to this day look back and think, well, how did it happen? Because it wasn't my intention to be a first team manager, but it just seemed to happen. And here I am, I don't even know how many years later, must be 15 years later, I'm still involved in one way or another.
No, it's fantastic. I think it's interesting because, like you just said, sometimes I think things happen just naturally. You know, a lot of people obviously will take opportunities that come their way. You know, you do have, say, for example, and I say at a lower level, it's no disrespect to people and going for certain roles, but when people do apply for managerial roles, they're usually the ones who apply for it. Whereas, you know, the longer that you're within the game and the more opportunities that you get, and also as well, reputation. I think reputation is important within any given job, really. But the more reputation you get, the more opportunities and people will look at you. So I think it's credit to obviously the journey that you've had so far and obviously the opportunities that come your way. It's interesting as well, because you mentioned about whilst you was playing, you was obviously sort of, combining it with a role, but you was also coaching within an academy. And you're also doing, like you said, your B license and a degree. Were those things which kind of, I mean, obviously quite a lot of players in this day and age, they will kind of get courses suggested for them to take. So you're looking at that sort of after football approach. Was it something that was kind of suggested, look, you know what, Paul, take this, it could be of use? Or was it something where you went, do you know what, actually, this is going to help me, like you said, on that, you know, physiology side or psychology side?
Yeah. No, I think nobody really pointed me in the direction of it. I think especially with the sports science degree, when I was at Derby County, I was the PFA rep for the club. And we kept getting all this information sent that I had to push to get players onto courses, education courses. And we got a leaflet through about a new sports science degree that was being set up with Crewe and Alsager College. And I thought, well, I keep pestering the life out of everybody to do a course, so really I should set an example and I should go and do one myself. So I started off on it, and it started where your first year was, I think it was a higher education certificate, and then there was a diploma for the second year, and then you could then do another, I think it was another 2 years to get the degree, and then the final year, the fifth year, was an honours degree. And I thought, well, I'll get my higher education certificate, I'll do that. And then when I got through that, I thought, I may as well have a go for a diploma. So I then carried on and did the diploma. And then I got to that point and thought, I'm going to duck out of it now. And my wife said to me, well, why don't you just give it a go and see if you can get a degree? So I went for that and then thought, I may as well have an honours degree if I'm going to go for it. So I ended up doing the full 5 years, and it was quite tough at the time. I've got to be honest with you. I remember my final year where I was doing my dissertation. I was also doing my A license and I was player manager at Rochdale. So all the things together just absolutely took over my life. And I think the way that it all sort of worked out for me, I was a player at Blackpool and I'd done all my badges and I was still doing my degree. And I decided that I needed to learn how to write a CV and how to do an interview, because as a footballer, you don't do an interview, your interview's on the grass. And yeah, I didn't have to do it. So I spoke to Steve McMahon and explained the situation and said, look, if any jobs come up, I'd like to apply, but I don't actually want the job. I just want to go through the process of learning how to do it. He agreed to it and the Rochdale job came up and I applied for it. Didn't get a response, didn't get an interview. And John Hollins got the job. And towards the end of that same season, John Hollins asked me to go there as a player. So I signed for the club. And nobody had even mentioned the fact that I applied for it. It just wasn't a conversation because, as I said, I wasn't even intending to have the job. We get to the end of the season. We'd lost the playoff semi-final against Rushden and we're at a Player of the Year do. And the chairman came up to me and said, are you still interested in being the manager of the team? And I said, not really, no, because John Hollins is the manager. He said, no, he's not. We can't agree a new contract. And as of tomorrow morning, we're sending somebody down to recover his car and bring it back, the club car. He will not be the manager. Are you interested? And I sort of said, well, let me have a think about it, but I'll certainly speak to you about it. So the way it sort of turned out, I ended up having an interview. And I got the job, and you sort of get into the job. And you, I remember I was going over to Hong Kong to play in the Hong Kong Sevens, the Masters tournament. So I was 35 year old. I remember being in Hong Kong thinking, wow, what have I just agreed to here? You know, I'm under eights coach for Blackburn Rovers Academy, and now all of a sudden I'm going to be a player manager. But I thought, I might never get another opportunity to do it, so just do it. And I think sometimes you get opportunities and you have to make a decision. Do I think it's right for me? I knew it was going to throw my whole life upside down, but I just thought I may as well give it a go. And I went into it. I said to the board of directors, look, I've got absolutely no experience of leading a group of people. I've got no experience of managing. Yes, I'm an experienced player. I've got all my badges. I've got a degree. But you're going to have to accept that I'm going to need help. And they said to me, yep, you'll get all the help you need. You'll be totally supported. And the truth is, I went into it and I was basically just left to do it all on, well, not all on my own. I had an assistant, Jamie Hoyland, and the two of us worked really well together. But it was tough. And because it was my first job, I look back now and I know I made mistakes. Probably my biggest mistake was dealing with the budget inside of it. I didn't spend the money particularly wisely. But that's all part of the learning. That's all part of the experience. And Rochdale fans probably still don't like me for it, but I made decisions on signings, and some of them worked, some of them didn't. But ultimately, when I left the club, I left them in a really strong financial position because we had a fantastic cup run. It took us to a live TV game away at Wolves where we got knocked out. But I left the club in a really strong financial position. But ultimately, because of probably the last 5 minutes of a game against Macclesfield, last game of the season where we conceded two goals, dropped us down about five or six places. The directors decided that they wanted to choose an assistant manager for me. And I had to make a stand in that as the manager, I feel, and I still to this point feel, that I make the decision of who my staff would be to work alongside me. And I took a bit of a gamble. They offered me a new two-year contract, which had been on the table for probably 2 or 3 months, but we just never got round to dealing with it because of the cup run and the way all the games are coming thick and fast. And they basically gave me the ultimatum. You either accept a two-year contract and we'll choose your assistant, or you leave. And I just said, right, thank you very much, I'll leave then. So I made that decision to leave. And there's been times through my whole career where I sort of think, you're a bit hot-headed there, you shouldn't have done that. But I have principles, and my mindset is that if I don't think it's right, then I don't do it. And I didn't feel that was right of the Rochdale directors to do it. So I chose to leave. Thankfully, I then got taken on by Carlisle just as a player, going back to my home city. Unfortunately for Roddy Collins, he got the sack after about a month of me being there. I was asked to be caretaker. And then suddenly the learnings that I'd had from Rochdale sort of really benefited me in the way that I was able to then go and manage at Carlisle United.
And just taking it back one step for a second, I was just going to say, it's interesting because like you just said there, you know, a lot of the time people who go, or coaches who go through their coaching qualifications, or like you said, a degree even, you know, they feel that they're learning information, which is correct. They're gaining knowledge, they're gaining sort of skill sets, which will help them. But I agree. I think nothing can set you up for, you know, managing a team and being put in an environment where, you know, you're under a pressured situation where you've got, let's be honest, fans who have opinions, which the majority of the time are not always right, but they just have an opinion and they want to be vocal, which is fine. They're allowed to have opinions, but, you know, so it's interesting. And take it back onto the degree aspect of it as well. And you, like I said, sometimes with the, you know, the Rochdale job, you just have to take opportunities. It's like that with a degree as well, I think, especially in this day and age. I know that, and I can speak for myself, there's a lot of coaches who obviously have qualifications, and depending on obviously how far they want to go, they may feel, do you know what, I've reached a plateau with my coaching qualifications until I get sort of a next opportunity. So they go down the route of having a degree. And I think these, like doing a degree is a key skill, like you said, even just in terms of writing CVs, communicating with people. Well, when you're a manager, you're going to have to communicate with your players. You know, writing reports. I mean, you know, a lot of academy coaches in this day and age, it's more writing than it is actually coaching because you're doing things like the ECCC. So it's all sort of key skills like that. And it's interesting. I done my dissertation on the way in which CPD is taught and how coaches learn through CPD. And, you know, some of the like feedback results from that is that, you know, a lot of the time the onus is kind of the coach will neglect what they don't want to learn. So, you know, you might get a coach and they'll go to a CPD event, but do it just for the accredited hours, versus a coach who might go to a course or a CPD because it's specific within what they want to learn. But as we're saying, managers, you know, there's nothing out there really in terms of actually seeing what it's like. So it must be really hard. And going obviously into that, again, taking it a little bit further step back, what's the kind of major difference then in terms of, you know, like you said, you was doing the under eights at Blackpool and you also coached the team at Blackburn as well, obviously young players. What's the difference in terms of coaching and, you know, say managing, but, you know, managing sort of expectations, I suppose, at that level compared to then, like you said, going into Rochdale and Carlisle?
I think the big difference, the thing that I felt I benefited from working with younger players is I realised that you have to be organised. You have to have your session to have a real flow to it and have like, if you've got the facilities and if you've got the area, to have like a bit of a carousel type working on it so that you can flow from one to the next. Because anybody who's coached under eights or under nines will know that if you stop for four or five minutes while you set something up, absolute chaos reigns. There's a bun fight going on. Everything can be going on and you've got to be organised. So working with the younger kids really benefited me in my organisation, because I still to this day now, after all these years of coaching, believe that you have to be organised. There has to be a flow to keep the players stimulated and to have it organised. So that was the big thing that coaching the younger players made me realise. Now, when you're coaching young players, they are like sponges. They are desperate for information. They're desperate for guidance. The way I used to coach in the academy was I used to let them learn through the game. So I wasn't, you know, and I've never been a coach who sets out a lovely pretty pattern of discs. I don't work that way. I think they have to learn within the game. They have to be able to problem solve for themselves. There's no point me telling them everything. I want you to go here when that happens and then here. And when you're in this situation, that's the ball you play. Because you end up with just robots and you end up with players who can't actually make football decisions when they're on the pitch. And I think that's really important that young children, girls and boys, have the opportunity to make football decisions for themselves, because that's what the game's all about. When it comes to a match, I can't be behind them like a Subutio goalkeeper just pushing them along on a stick. They have to know how to make those decisions. So I try to teach them within a game. So that's how I work. Now then, when you go with senior players, a lot of the times they actually just want sessions. It's not particularly about the coaching, they want sessions. I think over the years, I've probably evolved a little bit now. And I think probably because of working at the FA, I've evolved in that there needs to be more coaching in the actual session or more instruction, as opposed to just letting it go. I still try to let the session flow, and I might do it in blocks of 3 minutes where it's not a stop start. Look here, listen to my voice, listen to what I'm going to preach about how it should be done. I let the game flow for maybe two or three minutes, and then I'll stop and I'll coach while they're having a breather, and then I'll go back in and they'll play again. And that's how I try to do it, because again, they have to be able to make the decisions, and you've got to give them that opportunity to be making mistakes to learn from it. Because just like me going into management, I made mistakes in the role. They have to learn by making mistakes in their role as well. And hopefully, if you can create an environment where there's no fear about making mistakes, hopefully they'll learn that bit better and learn that bit quicker as well.
Yeah, no, totally. I agree with you. I think, especially because, like you said, in terms of how the FA sort of put out their approach, and, you know, a lot of it is behind sort of the education of obviously how you teach and deliver football. I think it's interesting. I always compare football to school. And, you know, especially with younger children anyway, like you said about just letting them play or giving them a bit of opportunity to play, you obviously get parents shouting, and there's that common thing of parents giving them instructions. And I say instructions, I mean, a lot of times it's just words, you know, and it's like pointless words. And like you said, the children have got to be the decision makers, or players in general have got to be the decision makers. And like I said, compared to school, because in school, when you have your lessons, obviously the teacher will teach. So in coaching, you have your coach you. And then obviously when you go into a match or in school, you have a test. I kind of compare a match to a test because it's like, well, now is your opportunity to show the when, how, where, why elements of football, really. And it's interesting because, like you said as well, about not wanting to make robots. I said, of course, we need to make these children or players in general have decisions, because in a way, and that's why I think it's quite interesting with players taking coaching courses, I almost think it's a coach's responsibility to almost create and develop the next batch of coaches in players. Yeah. Because if you're giving them the right knowledge, and obviously like somebody like yourself who has the technical ability as well, you know, you marry the two together, you know, it's a lethal duo, really. So I think it's really handy to have that element from a coach of understanding, do you know what, can I actually educate this player to have an understanding which will be beneficial for them in the future, but also beneficial for them right now in terms of being making those decisions. Obviously, throughout your career, I think you've obviously had a lot of success within terms of, you know, like you said, you've had back-to-back promotions, you know, you've had managerial opportunities in different divisions. So, like, you know, you're talking League Two, you're talking Conference, you're talking Championship as well. And obviously, we'll go into in a second about the international side of it as well. But what's that like in terms of, do you have to sort of, I mean, I know when you set out, you may obviously have ideas of a philosophy or a way in which you want to coach, like you mentioned there. But do you ever have to adapt it based on the league you're in or the situation maybe you're in, if you're, you know, in a relegation zone or whether you're aiming to push on and get promoted?
Of course you do. You have to adapt, because when you're in the professional game, you know, ultimately you're judged on results. You know, it's as simple as that. And people talk about having, oh, I've got this long-term goal and I've got this philosophy that I'm going to build. Philosophies are fine so long as you've got a short-term fix. If you don't have your short-term fix, you ain't going to get to your long-term goal, because it's a results business, you know. And I'm not daft enough to think that, oh, I can go in and I'll be given 3 years to do it, because it ain't going to happen, you know, because fans want to see winning football. Directors appoint people, chairman appoint managers and coaches to get winning football. And it doesn't matter what you do, if that's not done properly, if you haven't got results on the board that bide you the time, you may as well clear your desk, because you're going. And that's, you know, I think back to my, am I a little bit dark here? Should I just put a light on? Just give me one second.
Yeah, no problem at all.
It looks as if I'm sat in a dungeon. you know, when I went to Preston North End as manager, I went in there and basically because of the way all of the staff decided that they wanted to go with Billy Davis. So I didn't have a single problem with that, because, you know, they were going to Derby County, which is a fantastic football club. So I was totally comfortable with them doing it. I was a little bit uncomfortable with the sort of devious way that they did it and the sort of backhand tactics that they used. But that's another story. But I went into Preston North End, all of the staff resigned and walked out and sort of left me in a position where I needed to try and rebuild a football club. And I brought in somebody in the football in the community. I brought some really good people into the academy, or centre of excellence as it was at the time. I brought staff in to work with the first team. I had a whole host of players left the football club. When I took the job on, I looked at their record, and they had a fantastic record defensively from the previous season, with Carlo Nash in goals, Graham Alexander, Claude Davis, Yul Mwenny, another defender, I can't think what he was called now, who went to West Ham, Callum Davidson. And within about a week of me taking the job, Tyrone had been sold, Claude Davis had been sold, Yul Mwenny did his cruciate ligaments, all of my staff had gone, and I'm suddenly left thinking, wow, I need to rebuild this football club. So we rebuilt everything. We had a fantastic structure in place. The chairman came to me after about maybe 3 or 4 months and said, we absolutely love the job you're doing. It's absolutely superb. You're building a football club. We love that. It's not short term. We want to extend your contract to 5 years. So I was like, crack on. Yeah, give us a 5-year contract if that's what you want. And then we missed out on the playoffs. I still had 4 years left on my contract. Now, obviously, I don't know if people are aware of this, but most managerial contracts, unless you are the top level of management, you might have a 5-year contract, but you have a settlement period, whether it be 3 months, 6 months, a year, whatever. And that's what you get paid when you get terminated. So when your contract gets terminated. So we lost out on the playoffs at the end of the season. I had a really bad start to the next year. Everything was still in place for the club to move it forward over time. But I got the sack because results were poor. So, you know, and then the next manager comes in and suddenly these young players who were developing through the academy, they get into the first team and everybody's saying, oh, what a fantastic job this next manager's doing. But it was the sort of groundwork that had gone in place earlier. Now, again, I'm not saying for 1 minute that I didn't deserve the sack, because I did, because results were poor and we're in a results business. But I came away from that job and I had about 3 months out of it. And I sat for periods of time thinking, why did I bother building a football club? Why didn't I just be selfish and think about the first team and actually just look after myself? But I just don't feel that's the right thing to do. I think you have to go in as the focal point of that football club. I think you have to do the right things for the club. You know, I'm really just the guardian of that club for the period of time that I'm there. There's a lot of other people who are involved in clubs and in the centre of excellence. There's a lot of supporters who are involved. And I think you have to do it properly. So I've lost my job because I've focused on other areas of football clubs, I still believe it's the right thing to do. And I think you've got to have that philosophy when you go in as a head coach or as the manager. I think you've got to do what's right for the club, really.
Yeah, no, totally. I think it's interesting as well, because when the word philosophy is sort of brought about, and I'll be honest with you, I hate the word philosophy, because I agree. I think, you know, everyone's like, what's your philosophy? And, you know, everyone comes out with the fancy words. And like you said, honestly and truthfully, unless you're coaching at a really young age group, and even then, I think even then, obviously, you know, sat, say, for example, or let go if, you know, your results aren't going your way, because obviously at that age, it's more about the development. But you're still kind of frowned upon. And also, you don't really get to put your philosophy in play, because clubs will already have a style of play or a set curriculum to which they want you to play to. So I'm not a big fan of the word, but I think it's interesting what you mentioned there about, you know, philosophy. I think as well can mean sort of like, you know, the blueprint what you put in. And like you mentioned there, I think one of the most frustrating things must be as a manager when, like you said, you go to a club and you have these ideas in place and you think, right, this is what I want to do. Even in terms of your backroom staff as well. I mean, you know, you may say, for example, get a backroom staff which, you know, you're comfortable with. I think that's important, because just as much as the relationships on the pitch, it's also important to have that relationship off the pitch as well. But then, you know, assistant coaches may get opportunities to go and manage, which they may want to take. Or, you know, like you said, they may all of a sudden get the sack, and then all of a sudden some of those coaches want to stay there. And that must be such a tough thing to, you know, almost having to refresh every time you go into a new role or a new position.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's difficult. I mean, I'm a bit like you. I think you go into places and everybody talks about philosophies and talks about cultures and all this sort of stuff. Well, it's really difficult to do it. I mean, I don't look at it as culture. I talk about having standards. And I think if you have good standards, and this is something that's been drummed into me from my early days at Manchester City, was about how to be a good professional, how to, you know, the rewards that go with professional footballers now are incredible. They really are totally different from my day as a player. And I just think that if they have really good standards and they respect the role they're in, I think you've got a right good chance of having a good football club. If they have respect for their job, and because ultimately it does become a job. It's a bloody lovely job to be in, but it is a job. It is what everybody does all the day, and even though you're a professional footballer, you still go into work some days with a bit of baggage because you've had a crap day at home. The kids might be ill. Your missus might, you might have had a row. You might have crashed the car. The dog's died or whatever. You have a crap day. So even though you are blessed with a wonderful opportunity in life, you still have crap days. And that's when it is your job, and you just got to get through it and get on with it. But, you know, I think if you have that respect for your role and you're prepared to go and work hard and you're prepared to go and live your life properly off it, I don't think that's a massive sacrifice to make for the rewards that you're going to get in football. And that's something that's been drummed into me from day one when I was at Manchester City, that that's how you have to behave to be a good professional. So those are the things that I talk about with players. Now, if you've then got a good level of ability, and I have worked through all the leagues, I've worked in the conference, I've as a manager and a player, I've been as a player and a manager in League Two. I've been as a player in League One and never actually got the chance to manage Carlisle in League One when we went up, because I left for Preston. I've coached and managed in the Championship. I've coached in the Premier League. I've done international. So I've sampled all the different places to work. So the level of ability is different. So when you're working in the conference and you're coming up against a team who is really, really direct, you're coming up against a team who are part-time, who, you know, it means a lot to have a scalp of Carlisle United. You do have to adapt your game. You've got to change. But I always think that if you have your right standards, then that's your identity as a football club and as a football team. And that was something that I was really keen to make sure that we maintained high standards all the time. And thankfully, there's not been many times through my managerial career. Once I got over the first probably 4 or 5 months of some really tough times at Carlisle United, where we had a very unprofessional bunch of players that I had to change. I've been really fortunate that the standards that have been kept by the group of players that I've had have made my job enjoyable and made it, and not all the time, but made it a lot of the time quite a good job to have.
Yeah, nice. I think it's interesting as well, because like you mentioned there about sort of setting the standards, I know when I've done sort of mentoring roles before, and I've gone into a session, and you can often pick up the vibe from the players and how the players are. And I often think that reflects, and some coaches might get annoyed with this, but reflects on the coach. And I think, like you said there, I mean, you know, if your sort of values, your principles, your purposes of when you're setting up your team and your management style and things like that, it does reflect on the players. So like you said there, through your own experiences of maybe what you was kind of taught and experienced through at Manchester City, and then also through, like you said, going through the different divisions, all those experiences have kind of helped, I suppose, you to kind of, like you said, really, that, you know what, you need to have respect for your club. You need to have, even away from football, characteristics such as, you know, like how you talk to people and, you know, like you said, being just sort of aware, like you said, people may be having bad days. You know, someone might be ultimately, you know, they might change their whole attitude and snap back, you know, but you'll understand your players. You'll understand that actually, do you know what, it's they maybe have had a bad day, or, you know, like you said, maybe something hasn't gone their way. So I think, yeah, all of those things are really, really important. What would you kind of say is the, obviously taking that into sort of consideration, and like you said, sometimes you don't get the opportunity at these clubs when you're a manager, to then going into the scenario and the situation of, you know, doing it on an international stage where you've then got the, you know, England under 20 squad. And how did that sort of come about? Was that through applying, or was that through sort of, you know, the recognition of hard work you've done?
It came through with a bit of luck, if I'm going to be really honest with you, getting involved with England. Through my job at Derby County, I bought a house in Derbyshire, and I kept that house when I went up to Newcastle, because I knew that was a disaster waiting to happen. Taking that, going up with that job just wasn't the right timing for that role. But fantastic opportunity to work at a magnificent football club. Just didn't work out for myself and Steve McLaren, or Steve McLaren as the head and me with him. Didn't work out for us. So when I got back to my house in Derbyshire, I would go into St George's Park, which is about half an hour away from my home, just to go and observe on a couple of camps. Aidy Boothroyd and Steve Cooper invited me in just to go and watch them working in an international camp. So that was a real good education, just to see the levels of the players was outstanding. The first camp I went on was with Steve Cooper and the under-17s, who went on to win the World Cup finals. And just what I remember watching, they played a double header against Belgium, and they played two, I think it was 2 1-hour games. And so there was two 11s, Belgium put two 11s out and England put two 11s out. And the standard of both games was absolutely outstanding. And this was the likes of Jadon Sancho, Phil Foden, Mark Guy, you know, Tashan Oakley-Boo, these sorts of lads. The standard of both the games was absolutely fantastic. So that sort of whetted my appetite. And then I went and watched the under-20s with Aidy. And the head of the development team, Matt Crocker, asked if I'd go and have a coffee with him and said, would you be interested in getting a job with England? Like, what a silly question that is. Would I be interested? I said, of course I'd be interested. You know, I'm a really patriotic England supporter. I love, whether it's England football, England cricket, England rugby, whether it's the women's team, whether it's the women's cricket. All the time, I love watching our national teams play. And I said yes. Started with the under-16s as the assistant coach, working with that group, which interestingly enough was the 2001 birthdays, who was my last team that I worked with at the FA. And so to see them as under-16s and then working with them as under-19s, just to see that development was really good. And then after a couple of camps with the 16s, we had the situation that came up because of Sam Allardyce with the media and him losing his England job. Gareth stepping up, Aidy stepped up to 21s. And the under-20s had already qualified for the World Cup in South Korea. And we had no head coach. So Matt Crocker again asked me if I would be interested in taking the team. So again, took me about 5 seconds to decide, yes, I'll do it. So it was just a bit of luck, really. And then I ended up going. I had a camp over in France with them in March. And that was the first time I'd met the group and worked with them. We went over, we played Senegal, France and Portugal, and we won that tournament. And then we had about 39 days to plan the World Cup, where we got everything in place. Went to South Korea, and it was just, I mean, it was a fantastic experience to be involved in it. To be involved with that group of players who were just totally professional about the way they went about it. And I went over there and I set them little challenges, because for me, the whole perception of young English footballers wasn't particularly positive. I didn't think the rest of the world thought very highly of us. So I wanted us to go and change the perception of what people thought about us. Didn't think we were going to win it, got to be honest with you. I then set them the challenge. We hadn't won a game in World Cup finals. I think it was for 20 years, maybe even 24 years, we hadn't won a game. And in fact, the last couple, we hadn't even scored a goal. And it was about 28 years since we'd won two consecutive games. So my first challenge was about going there and respecting everybody, treating South Korea, treating the hotel, treating the staff with a level of respect that they respect us back. And that wasn't actually very difficult, because the South Korean people are the most wonderful people you'll ever come across in the world. They really are top, top people. So they welcomed us into their hotels, welcomed us into the country, but the players responded in the right way as well. So we ticked that box. We then came into the first game against Argentina, and I said, we have to score a goal to better the last group that came. Even can we go and get a result? Well, we won that game 4-0. So I said, brilliant. Now can you go and tick the next box, in that we haven't won consecutive games for 24 or 28 years, wherever it was. And we drew against Guinea in the second game. So we hadn't fulfilled that one. We then played South Korea and we won it, qualified for the next stage. And then we then went and, well, you have to win to get through because you're at the knockout stage. So we then had a succession of consecutive wins to get to the end of it. So we ticked all the little boxes that I wanted to. And then obviously the final one, you win the final and you come away with a lovely gold medal and some fantastic memories. But I was just really fortunate to be in that position, to be given the opportunity to go and work with that group of players and a group of staff. We had 23 players. We had 17 full-time members of staff to go there. And the FA were absolutely superb in the support for the under-20s to go to that World Cup. And that was the start of a brilliant summer for the FA, in where we won the 20s World Cup, the 19s won the Euros in Georgia with Keith Downing. I think it was about October time, on November the 17th, went to India and won it with Steve Cooper. So it was there was just little things along the way that were just absolutely fantastic, and memories that'll never go away.
Yeah, of course. I think as well, even, you know, you obviously know the stories that happened over here, but like, you know, even over here, like, I mean, let's be honest, a lot of the time, the sort of younger England age groups, people who maybe aren't as patriotic, kind of, they'll look at their phones and see what the results are. But there was such a big buzz behind it at the time. You know, people were tuning in to wherever they could. I think people had it on their radios. It was, you know, the whole country was going absolutely crazy.
I think there was a real turnaround, because in recent years, and I go back to my own days in about 1984, maybe 85, where Manchester City wouldn't let me go to the Under-20 World Cup, which was in Russia. But on this occasion, all of the clubs were brilliant in supporting us, and they released the players for us to go. So we ended up going with a really, really strong squad. And I always remember my, excuse me, my first press conference that I did over in South Korea. There was two people in the room. That was all. Nobody else was interested in it, just two journalists. One of them was South Korean, and I think the other one was from Argentina. There was nobody from England there. And then when we won the quarterfinal, there was probably about 30 or 40 people in the room, and I was asked if I would go and do an interview with Talk Sport and an interview with Five Live and an interview with Sky Sports News. And you think, oh, people have actually woken up here. They know we're over here. And then obviously after the final, it was just absolute bedlam, and the whole media room was packed, and we had English journalists out there, and we had interviews to do all over. So the way that it all snowballed was brilliant. But again, it's football supporters want to see winning teams, don't they? Yeah. So England were winning, so everybody got interested, and it it made for an interesting time anyway.
Yeah, no, totally. I think it's such a big achievement. I think there's someone, I saw an article and someone was like, you know, the 51-year wait is over. Just from an England perspective of, you know, like, you know, winning the World Cup. And I think, you know, I think especially in this day and age as well, and I'm not saying that in isolation, but I think what you achieved out there was a massive, you know, sort of benchmark for other countries and just England as a whole, really, to really, like you said, wake up and, you know, realise, number one, the talent that we have within this country in terms of young players. Yeah. And as well, if I'm being honest with you as well, yourself, the managers as well, I think, you know, again, we see Gareth, and rightly so, he's doing a fantastic job of bringing up young players. But like you were mentioning about where you're, I think it's your time at, you said Carlisle or maybe Christmas, sorry, where you said about, you know, what you was doing behind the scenes, and then later on you might see things happen and come to the forefront and they go, oh, this person's doing a brilliant job. But, you know, it's like, for example, you've given so many players the opportunity to go out there and I say develop, because that's what they are doing. I mean, obviously they're winning stuff as well, because it was a fantastic achievement, but yeah, that's part of their development. And, you know, you've now got players who potentially Gareth can go to and pick based on being like, well, do you know what? We played in that Paul Simpson team where we won something, and actually they're winners going into the team now.
I think what the FA deserve a lot of credit for is that they had this plan, this long-term plan that Dan Ashworth decided, and the decision was made eventually after a bit of a drag in the heels to build St. George's Park.
Yeah.
And I remember at the time when Dan delivered the press conference about England DNA, and him getting absolutely slated for it. And I wasn't actually involved at the FA then, but and I wasn't critical of it. I'll be honest with you, I didn't really look into it because it wasn't affecting me in club football. But Dan got slated for this England DNA and this how we're going to play, the way England how we play. But my group that went to the World Cup was the first group to come into St. George's Park and to work its way through the pathway. So that was the sort of fruits of the rewards of all the hard work that had gone into it. And I was just I described myself as one of the kids from the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. I got one of the golden tickets and I was the one who was asked to go and take the team. So, you know, it wasn't, people said to me, oh, wow, what did you do with them? And it's like, no, let's not get confused here. It doesn't mean I'm a brilliant coach. It means that we had some really, really good players. To be a good coach, you need good players. You know, you can put your ideas across and you can have a style of managing those players. But, you know, I'm still the same bloke who all the Preston fans think was rubbish and deserved the sack. And the Rochdale fans think I'm rubbish. I've changed and I've learned since that. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, I haven't got any master plan. We had really good players. We had good players who lived their lives properly, stuck to the game plan and believed in what we were trying to do. Could actually could execute a game plan, could learn how to make a decisions in games, you know, could do that sort of thing. And, you know, the FA deserve a lot of credit for having the balls to go and build St. George's and have this DNA. But I think the club coaches and all of the you know, your players all start somewhere at grassroots. They then go through football and the community programs. They then go through centre of excellences or academies. And there's a lot of coaches who've touched that pathway along the road to them getting to the World Cup. So for me, I was really lucky that I think there was 23 players in it. And as I say, I think there was 20 medals got given out to members of staff because Dan had one and the chief exec got one, Martin Glenn. So there was about 20 medals given out. So about 43 medals were given. But if you look back through all of that group's pathway, there probably should have been about 500 for everybody who played a part along the way, really, because that was a culmination of lots and lots of people and lots of hours and years and parents travelling to take them to coaching and travelling to take them to games on rainy Sunday mornings. So, you know, it was that's years and years of it all coming together. And you know, in England, we have got a really, really good system where we've got good coaches who are working with the young players. And we've got to actually, I think there comes a time where we've got to actually start giving ourselves a bit of a pat on the back, because it's all very easy to go and say, oh, the Germans are the best. They've got the best pro license. And we had a spell where it was the Dutch and then it was the Spanish and then it's Portuguese. Well, hang on a minute. We're actually not bad ourselves. We've got good English coaches around. Give us a chance. You know, give them a chance to get these jobs. You know, I've got nothing against any foreign people coming in. We still have got some real top foreign coaches working in our country. Look at the likes of what Bielsa's done at Leeds, what Klopp's done at Liverpool, obviously Guardiola, what he's doing. But then you have a situation where you've got coaches coming from B teams in Germany and B teams in Portugal. Well, would a club give an English B team coach a first team manager job at championship level? And I'm not sure they would. And I wonder why. I don't know why we don't trust our own. You know, I remember when I did my pro license and I went over to Feyenoord on a study visit, and we asked the question of Ruud Gullit and Mark Votter, why don't you have English coaches over here? And they said, well, we're the best in the world. Why would we bring English over? So why don't we have that confidence in ourselves and that, I suppose, bordering on arrogance about ourselves, and give ourselves jobs, look after our own and give people the opportunity. But I don't know whether we will change, but I'd really love to see a lot of English coaches given opportunities somewhere down the line.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think as well, like you mentioned about the FA, I think the FA have done a fantastic job. And I think, you know, the years prior to the England DNA coming about, you know, even then there was talks of, well, should we do, like you said, do it the Spanish way, because Spain had won the World Cup and the Euros, and then, you know, you move on to Brazil. If Brazil won something, should we do it the way that Brazil were doing it? So I agree with you. I think that it's so important to kind of, you know, have exactly. Your own way of doing things and going about that, you know, with what they believe. And obviously, like you said, now We're seeing that come out. And obviously, like you said, in terms of, like, you know, English coaches getting an opportunity. So obviously, currently you're at Bristol City as the assistant manager with Dean. And obviously, number one, fantastic start to the season. How was that sort of that change for you now going into an assistant manager's role, where before you may be the manager? Is it easy to adapt, or do you just use your previous
experience? Yeah, it is. I think it's, as an assistant manager, it's actually a much easier role. It's much less stressful. That's the first thing. And I noticed that when I went to Derby County with Steve McLaren. And me and Steve used to have conversations all the time where he'd say, this is the team I'm picking. And we'd have, I wouldn't say we ever got to an argument point, but we'd have some discussions and debate about whether that was the right thing. He'd say, who'd you play in midfield? I'd go one. And he'd say, well, I'm thinking this. And I'd say, well, come on, then you tell me why. I'll tell you why. And we'd have debates. And sometimes he listened, sometimes he did his own thing. But as an assistant, whatever the head coach manager decides, you go with it 100% and you back it, and you just got to get on with it. And I remember one day Steve saying about, he said, we've got a big decision to make this weekend. And I said, what do you mean, big decision? He said, well, we need to pick the right team for this game. And I said, oh, well, hang on a minute. I said, that's where you're getting mistaken here. I said, you get paid the big bucks to make the decisions. I'll give you an opinion. You make the decision. You decide how to do it. And that's how I look at it with an assistant. But with Dean, I mean, I had Dean Holden as a player when I was manager at Shrewsbury. And I've kept in touch over the last year or so. And I've seen him in St. George's Park on different courses. And he called me up and just said, we were going through a big redundancy at the FA over the summer. There's about, I think there was about 70 or 80 people were going to be made redundant. And I was obviously at risk of being made redundant. I had to go in for an interview to apply for my own job back. And Dean rung me the day before and said, I'm going in for an interview tomorrow. I think I might have the job at Bristol City. I'd like you to be my assistant. And it's the first time in 3 or 4 years where I've had a phone call of offering a, not so much offering, but an inquiry, would you be interested in this role? It's the first time that I thought, do you know what? I really fancy the idea of that. Because I'd had 4 years working at the FA where it's brilliant when you're on camp. You have about 56 days a year where you've got the players. But the rest of the time you're sat in an office, you're sat in front of a computer and you're doing analysis stuff and you're doing planning and preparation and reviewing. And I wanted the madness of being on the grass again. Yeah. And people said to me, used to say to me, you'll regret it. After about a month, you'll wish you were back at the FA. But I'm not. I'm really enjoying the day-to-day stuff. I'm enjoying all of the craziness that goes with it, dealing with the media, dealing with players all the time, dealing with issues, getting stressed in the technical area. I just wanted to get back to it, and I'm thoroughly enjoying it at the moment. And so far, we've had 3 games, 3 wins, so we should probably retire now and just stop.
No, it's fantastic. I think, you know, like you said, yeah, obviously, you know, we've had a great start to the season. We spoke earlier about, obviously, you know, great new additions to the team. And yeah, I think, you know, Bristol City are a team that deserve to obviously push on and do bigger things. So, and I think that'd be credit to yourself and Dean when they do. So, fantastic. But incredible insight into your journey. Obviously, you know, looking into yourself as you enter as a player, then obviously in terms of manager. And I think, yeah, you've had an array of experiences, like you said, so many different levels. And I think that's why it was so important to get you on here, because, you know, your knowledge and experiences are almost unmatched and uncompared to. So, yeah, hopefully a fantastic insight for the listeners. But yeah, like I said, I really, really do appreciate you giving up the time for this, because I think it'll be very beneficial for a lot of coaches and players wanting to become coaches out there.
No problem at all. You know, as I say, thank you for asking me on. I mean, the big thing I would say to people is, yes, do the courses, get all of that, but get out and about, get on the grass and coach, go and watch other people. If you get any opportunity to go and watch people coaching, go and try and pick their brains. I think that you do your courses and you learn so much on them, but there's nothing like learning by actually doing the coaching, being in the thick of it and having to make decisions and letting play. I always remember, I'll just finish with a little thing. When I was manager at Shrewsbury Town, my assistant manager, his wife was going into labour. She was being induced on the day of a reserve team game. And I had 2 senior players, Mike Jackson and Graham Coughlin, who were doing their coaching badges. And Stuart said to me, look, Tanya's in labour. She's going to be in labour tomorrow. She's been induced. Is it okay if I miss the game? And I'm like, don't even ask me. Family's more important than football. You go, just go, you know, don't worry about it. So I spoke to Jacko and Graham Coughlin and said, look, do you fancy taking the reserve team tomorrow for me? And they were like, what do you mean? I said, well, the way it works with reserves, I pick the team, I tell you the shape, but you do it how you want. It's entirely up to you. So as of, we're going to train on Tuesday morning, the game's Wednesday afternoon. As of Tuesday lunchtime, you two are the reserve team coaches to take that game on Wednesday. So if you want the players in the afternoon to go and do some work, you can do that as long as you don't kill them. And then you run the game on the Wednesday. And they said, oh, wow, absolutely brilliant. We'd love to do it. So they took the game. And they said to me, just give me one piece of advice about how to go through the game. I said, well, when you're studying that technical area, you'll have a million and one thoughts going through your head. You'll want to change the system probably 3 times within that first 10 or 15 minutes. Don't panic. Just relax and let the game happen and let the game take shape. And then if you really feel you need to do it after 15 minutes, that's when you can make that decision. But you have to decide. You make all the decisions on the day. And they did it. I can't even remember the result. I wasn't even bothered about the result. It's more about how they went about it. And when I spoke to them afterwards and said, how did you find it? And they said, wow, that feeling of being in the technical area and having to make those decisions. You were right. We wanted to change it after about a minute. We thought, oh no, we've picked the wrong shape. We shouldn't have done it and blah, blah, blah. And until you've actually experienced that and you've gone through it, you just don't know that feeling. And that's what I always say to coaches. If you can have that experience of being in the technical area, or on the side of a pitch and having to make those decisions, that is the best experience you can ever have, and have, and that's the best learnings you'll ever get. So I would say to any coaches, go and do it, go and have a go at it, and go and try it out, and learn from those experiences, and learn from those feelings you get when you're on the sideline. And as I said, when I was working for the FA, I used to sit in the stand and get jealous of people getting stressed in the technical area. And now I'm back getting it, and my grey hairs are coming back, and I'm loving it, really enjoying it.
Make sure that you follow and subscribe to the Daily Coaching Podcast so that you never miss out on an episode.